I think we are just about live.
Okay.
There we go. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I am here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar for our usual Tuesday afternoon stream. Dana, welcome back.
That's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Always happy to have you. So for those of you who are new around here, Dana and I do these streams every Tuesday, usually, and we alternate channels every now and then. One of us misses, sometimes me, but sometimes, a lot of times, sometimes, but we try to do these every Tuesday, and we alternate channels between this channel and Dana's channel, which is called Thrive After Abuse, and you can find Dana there and at thriveafterabuse.com and around the internet at that moniker. So make sure that you subscribe to both of us if you are interested in these streams and in connecting with us in this way. And here we are with me and my ears. Woo! Okay, there it goes. All right. Sorry. Okay, so today we thought we would talk about something kind of interesting. There's a new study out, and it came from Canada. I'm going to tell you more about that in a second. It's a study that tells a new strange way that they say that we can see a narcissist. We can spot a narcissist very quickly in public. And right? And I think it's interesting because a couple of things. Number one, and before I tell you what this is, I'm going to tell you this. Number one, I don't think it's entirely accurate. So I'll just preface with that, because I know that certain people may do this thing that I'm going to tell you without actually this behind it. There might be a reason they're doing it that's beyond that, right? Okay. Beyond narcissism. But essentially, what the study says is that the way that you can spot a narcissist now in public is whether or not they're wearing a mask. What do you think about that?
I think that's very interesting. Did they kind of talk more about that?
They absolutely did. they said it's possible that maskless people you might meet aren't making a political statement, but just don't want to cover what they think is their defining features or their best, you know, their face. they said it would be nice to know what evidence might be supporting face mask use and its possible links to narcissism. Given the relative recency of face coverings, there are no direct investigations. However, a 2019 study by University of Toronto's Miranda Giacomin, I'm probably saying that wrong, and Nicholas Rule, comes remarkably close to providing an answer, one that you can eventually use in what might ultimately become a post-COVID era. So what they're saying is they note that making first impressions can prevent costly interpersonal mistakes. The author suggests that if you could get to the dark triad personality tendencies involving narcissism lying underneath the, you know, charismatic veneers. Basically, they're saying you could avoid people if you could see this on their face, which we already know. But then they settled on, we talked before about the eyebrows, right? How the eyebrows, they were saying were the part of the face that could do the thing. But it says, you know, basically what it comes down to is they're saying they like to show off their body. They like to have authority over people. I'm trying to see here across the remaining three. Okay. So they think that if you are wearing with or without a face mask, you have the ability to make this judgment, they say, based on the eyebrows. But regarding to the question of wearing the mask, it would seem logical that a person's choice to wear it or not wear it might be regarding whether or not they want their face to be shown, and that could be narcissistic. It doesn't sound logical to me. It sounds wrong. And let me just say this really quickly, and then I want to ask you for your thoughts on it, Dana. I know that was a lot of rambling, but my thought is I know that I'm sure there are a couple of people out there in the world who don't wear a mask because of narcissism, but I think a lot of narcissists would be more concerned about. I do know that some people have pointed out a certain president in that capacity, and I'm not going to talk politics at all, so I don't want to do that. But they've noted that he didn't wear a mask for a long time, and now he wears it wrong or something. I don't pay attention. But I just don't think a mask is or lack thereof is a necessary indication of narcissism at least in the toxic sense that we talk about. But I could see a narcissist thinking they're above it or thinking that they don't need to do it because they won't get sick or they're not sick or whatever. But what are your thoughts?
I would agree. I guess I can kind of see a maybe a loose correlation between people, you know, who want their face to be seen or
I know
that, like that level, like they want the admiration or they feel self-conscious, like they don't look good in a mask.
Yeah.
That could pertain to like a certain degree of narcissism, not necessarily like a pathological degree, but it's
right.
Inching its way there. My guess would be it's more people that, and probably more along the lines of like antisocial behavior that where there's kind of this blatant disregard for rules and social norms. And it's all about me, you know, like I'm not going to wear a mask regardless of what science says because I don't believe in COVID or it's not going to happen to me, or I don't care about you. I care about my comfort and my personal freedoms over your health and safety.
Yeah.
So
I could see that. But is it, but on the flip side of that, right? Mm-hmm. I've heard people say, and I don't know how much of this is true or false, but I'm just telling you what people say. I've heard people say that they can't breathe in a mask. And initially I found the same thing, but I found that moving from a paper mask to a cloth mask helped me. I've heard people, you know, I have heard a couple people complain. Okay, it was me. I complained one time about wearing lipstick and a mask. I had to take it off. But then I thought, what's the point? Now I don't even bother to wear makeup in public half the time because if I'm going to cover it all up anyway, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. But I have seen people talk about other health issues related to it, anxiety issues related to it. So I can't imagine that all of those people are narcissists in that same sense that, you know what I'm saying? So I don't think it means they have no empathy. But with that being said, I can definitely see an interesting thought there. So in your mind, what are some better ways to spot a narcissist off the top of your head?
Well, I think you're touching on some great points as far as empathy and, like effective communication, their thought process being based in reality, versus kind of like they have to be right. No matter how many facts you put in front of them, they're just going to stand there and defend their position. These kinds of things. I saw a question in the chat. Somebody was saying, well, how do you tell the difference between a person who's just immature or young versus narcissism? And we get that a lot.
Yeah.
And I, you know, my take on it, I think it's probably your take on it too, is it really doesn't matter. It's more about behavior. Like we don't need to go around diagnosing people. It's if somebody has problematic behavior, the big takeaway here is to be able to understand how to see it for what it is, and then to be able to respond to it effectively and, to kind of to have healthy boundaries in the process. So it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the person's 6 years old or if they're 66 years old, if they have really problematic behavior, it's seeing it for what it is, not excusing it, not being like, oh, well, they're only six. And, you know, little Johnny, he just gets frustrated and just chases me with scissors.
Right.
like, okay, no, this is a problem. This needs to be handled and addressed. Or, oh, well, that's grandma. She has Alzheimer's. She's 96. She leaves the stove on all the time. It doesn't matter what the cause is. If it's problematic, it's problematic. So. Right.
I totally agree. Yep. Totally agree. So let's see here. What do we have in the, I see Jillian. Hey, Jillian. Let's see, we have some people in the chat. Do you have any questions from the chat for us yet?
No, people are, the whole, a lot of comments about masks and.
And you got, so I want to answer that question. I'm sorry. I just realized.
Yes, please do.
Okay. Yeah. So I've seen this a lot. And I actually did it. I think I did a whole video on how do you recognize a person who's a narcissist versus someone who's traumatized and immature, I think was the title of it. And that was in response to someone else's question back in the day, a year or two ago, I think. But what I would say in this case is, how do you differentiate? So I would say, yeah, it's about figuring out the empathy factor, exactly what you pretty much said. Because I was definitely an immature 20-year-old. When I turned 21, I had to, 22, I had to get over it because I had a baby at 22. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was most definitely, and I still, even then, if I'm being honest, I wasn't fully emotionally developed. I just had to get over myself a little bit at that point. But I think the difference is she capable of listening? Is she capable of hearing you? Is she capable of caring about how you feel? And that's what it comes down to. So I think you're right. I think everything you said was on point on that one. Yeah, I don't mean to be so distracted. I'm sorry about that. I got carried
away. That's okay. I'm getting distracted too. Kind of catching up on the chat.
Yeah, me too. It's one of those days. Yeah, let's see. Jodi Ann says, so what are you going to do for when you wear makeup? I think in regard to the mask. And I've gotten to the point where I just don't bother with lipstick in public, or even if I'm going just to go somewhere where I'm not going to take my mask off, and then I'm going to come back home, I'm going to go to the store or some other public thing. I'm not even going to bother to wear makeup. I just moisturize and move on, because it's not, obviously we wear makeup because we like it and because it makes us look a certain way or whatever. But I think the mask thing does eliminate, for me, it eliminates the need, because if it's just going to rub on the mask, get the mask dirty, then what's the point? Mm-hmm. Somebody gave us a super chat. Let me see if there. Oh, hello, Harmonica, and thank you for the super chat. Are you ready to? Can I pull this question out real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. How do you get a guy that doesn't message or talk on the phone much and thinks that a 2-hour long distance relationship doesn't work? He has never been in one, but you see each other on the weekends. We like each other, but how do I break this? How do you get a guy that doesn't message or talk on the phone much and thinks a 2-hour long distance relationship doesn't work? He's never been in one, but they see each other on the weekends and they like each other. But how do I break this? I think, okay. Dana, do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm a little confused. Does the question, Harmonica, I guess, can you clarify? It sounds like the guy is not interested in a long distance relationship for whatever reasons. And is your question, how do you get him to be interested in a relationship with you?
That's what I'm trying to find.
Or how do you break it off?
I'm trying to see. Okay. I think I don't see her responding just yet, but Peggy says that she wears hats when she doesn't wash her hair. I like that.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Anyway. Okay. Well, let's just, until we hear from Harmonica, let us assume that it kind of sounds to me like she's asking, how does she get that person? Oh, she says, yes. Yes to which?
Yes to how do you get this person in a relationship?
That's it.
Get in a relationship. Okay.
Okay. Any thoughts on that?
I
can start if you want.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know. Sorry.
Yeah. I was just saying, well, you don't like, you
right.
Don't get them in a relationship.
Yeah. I mean,
okay. She's saying, he wants to take it slow.
Okay. I think that's something. There's no reason to not take it slow. I think it's actually very healthy to take it slow, especially, and I think it's especially healthy that he's saying take it slow. So I think, is there a reason that you don't want to take it slow? Is my question. Okay.
Here's my take on it is, if a person is really interested in you, they'll make the effort. Mm-hmm. And you won't have to try to talk them into it or pave the way for them or try to make it easier for them. They'll make the effort. If he's saying he wants to take it slow. So then it sounds like he does, he's interested in potentially something. But I guess I would kind of question, since he's not interested in really making any effort, kind of based on what you're saying, then when you're seeing him, is it just sexual?
That's a good question. She said she hasn't heard from him the phone from him on the phone in a day. I think the issue is that Harmonica, maybe if you want a healthy relationship, then let it go slow. And if it's right for you, it will be worth the wait. And if it's not, then you'll know. And hopefully before it becomes toxic or unhealthy. It turns out that people who want to go slow in relationships, unless they're using that to, I almost think almost always it can be healthier that way, especially when you're not living together and you're not even in the same, area. You need to go slow. So I guess if you wanted to in any way speed it up, then you would probably want to date someone closer to home. But still, please remember that going slow is a very healthy, positive thing. Issue, it's better. In my opinion, it can help you avoid a toxic relationship because it gives you time to figure out who that person really is. And when you live far away from somebody, they can be perfect from far away forever, until they get closer on a more consistent basis, right? What the world?
Oh,
Oh.
we've got another super chat from Neil who says, hey, Angie, just wanted to say thanks so much for the great information.
Thank you. I
Yes.
almost freaked out for a minute there, Neil, because it said 10,000, but that's $3 USD. I
Yeah.
don't even know. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. We appreciate you. Okay. Yeah. So I would say again to, yeah. Okay.
And real quick too, Harmonica, I would flip the question around and figure out, instead of trying to figure out how do you kind of get this guy into a relationship, asking yourself, what do you need in a relationship?
Yes.
And then seeing if he's willing to do that. So if you're like, okay, well, I really want to have a relationship with anybody, but with this person, and I really like to talk to my partner, if we're dating, every day or kind of whatever it is, I like for us to say at least good night, especially if they're living a couple hours away. I like for us to make plans, where we maybe we meet halfway, or he comes to my area one weekend and I go there one weekend, or you figure out like what works for you, and then see if the other person's willing to compromise and willing to do that. If they're not, if it's all one-sided where you're always going over there, it's always very sexual, they kind of are interacting with you as if it's an afterthought. And if you bring this up to them and say, boy, I'd really like for us to speak more often. I'd like for us to do get to know each other and do other things. I'd like for us to be in a committed relationship. Is this what you're looking for too? But I would also preface that with keep in mind that there's a lot of people out there that will say whatever they need to say in order to keep people on the hook just because they want to use them for sex. So pay attention to his actions and not his words.
Right.
So.
I totally agree 100%. I want to come back around to the face mask thing really quick with
Okay.
some comments out of the chat. So we have Jody Ann saying a face mask can also be makeup. And then we have Peggy saying, I disagree that anti-maskers should be labeled as narcissists. I also, like I said, I pretty much disagree with that as well, but I don't have any. Jody, no, she can't be talking to me there. What's for tea says, I've read about the mask thing too. I can understand why, in a way, because they think they're above everyone. I think it's possible, but I'm sure there are many exceptions, so not a fair barometer. And that's exactly what I think. What's for tea, the same thing. Anja, I'm not sure how to pronounce Anja's first name, and I'm sorry for that. So I'm going to call you Anja. says, I guess you don't see a narcissist based on physical things. And I kind of agree with that because I don't even think it has anything to do with anything outside of, I really think that it's more about what's on the inside, believe it or not, of a narcissist. And I've seen some really trashy looking narcissists and some who looked amazing, you know what I mean? And everything in between, just like every other human. So I don't think it's about appearance so much as it's about how they think about it, themselves and other people, you know, the empathy or lack thereof.
I think kind of the common understanding of a narcissist or pathological narcissism is that high degree of vanity.
Right.
But like we've all experienced that, that surfaces in a wide variety of ways. Mm-hmm. And it's not always based on appearances.
Right. Right. So. And the fact is, I see people in the chat thinking this is my personal opinion, I think, and that's not the case. This is not my study. This is a study. I'll put a link in the description after this goes live later, but this is a study I found on Psychology Today. So definitely not my opinion or my study. Mm-hmm. So, and Maura says, I can see the disregard for the health of others being a sign. And that's, I see that too, but that's again, not what most of the other people. And I do think that there are people who believe that, that, who feel that the whole COVID thing isn't even a thing. And I know that there are people who believe similar, like I've seen people in the chat saying, you know, if you've already had it, you don't need to wear it. You're immune for a period of time after that. And I don't, you know, but I like Carmen's point. Carmen says, I like the way my mask looks. I feel like an outlaw in it. I like that. I have a mask mm-hmm. that has bling on it and everything. I'm all about, I have one for like several different colors and might as well make it an accessory. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. Man, it's great. I love being able to just kind of roll out of bed and
right.
go to run my errands and yeah, throw my hair back and put a mask on. And
nobody even knows.
Very, very freeing. It also makes me very aware of my coffee breath, which I am so sorry to everybody that's ever been around me.
That's a valid point. I ate onions one time and I was like, woo.
Yeah. So yeah. I had some Greek food the other day and it had like garlic in it. And I put that mask on. I'm like, oh boy. Okay. I need to be more aware of this when stop wearing masks. Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. That is great. Punish No More says, I think there is science that proves masks don't prevent the virus. However, there is respect for the elderly and sickly that we need to take into consideration. And, you know, the way that I feel about it, I don't really know what I think about it, but I'll just wear it just because that's what the mandate is where I live. That's why I wear it. Because if you don't wear it, you know, to me, it's not a big deal. You know, my son is 16 and works at McDonald's and has to wear it the whole time he's there. And among other precautionary things, you know, so it's, I mean, at least I don't have to wear it like that, you know, because mm-hmm. I work from home as you do, Dana, I think. And so it's not so, you know, it's not so bad for me, but I do feel bad for people who have to wear them all day, especially if they struggle, you know. But my son says at this point, it's just like second nature to him. He doesn't mm-hmm. bother him at all. So, and Jillian says, just a thought, the narcissist that I knew had a superhero complex, so I'm sure he's out there running around with a Batman mask.
Oh boy.
I love that. Yeah, that's probably true. and Zappy Cat says children need to see faces, and I totally agree with that. I agree with that, but this is why we have I guess at school they're wearing masks, those who are in school are wearing masks. Those who are, I have one at school and one not, one doing home, the homeschool thing with the computer. And so, yeah, anyway, so that one gets to see the faces on the computer, but the one that goes to school doesn't see the faces, but they're older. They're not little children. So 12 and 16. Go ahead.
Yeah. I would just encourage people to fact check things from reliable sources. My mom and I had this conversation the other day. I forget what it was. Some story she'd heard about, what was it? A couple in Idaho. Oh, I don't even remember. And you know, she hears these things on Facebook or from friends, and it's kind of from a friend of a friend said this and whatever. And Google it and look at the sources. And, you know, National Institute of Health is a good source. There's a lot of like pseudoscience and experts out there, and it's really important that we get our information from reliable sources and from studies, accurate studies, and not just what somebody thinks. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of anger in the chat today. So again, I just want to say this. We are not here to talk about masks, not really. We're here to talk about this study that says that people who don't wear a mask might be a narcissist, and we're saying we don't agree with that. So let me make that clear. Outside of that, you know, my feelings are irrelevant, and I wear it just because it's easier to not get yelled at by somebody in public, mostly. And because if it helps, then great. If it doesn't help, it doesn't hurt either. So it's fine for me personally, but I don't push anyone else to do anything. And I don't yell at people in the store when they have a mask, don't wear a mask. In fact, I was at the store just the other day and I saw an older gentleman who was probably late 60s, early 70s, maybe, not wearing a mask. He was the only one in the whole store not wearing a mask. And I thought, okay, he didn't say a thing. So I wouldn't ever attack anyone for that. And I don't want anyone to assume otherwise. I'm not sure who they think the guest is, but somebody said the guest here is causing a problem, but there's no guest causing a problem. Dana's here every Tuesday with me, and yeah, I'm on her channel every other Tuesday. I mean, alternating Tuesdays. So she's practically family, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. All right, let's get back to it. Do you guys have questions about this or about narcissistic abuse recovery or anything related to that? Let us know in the chat. Maybe use hashtag question so we can see it. And we are happy to do that. Okay, here's one from Teresa. She says, have you guys ever seen or dealt with a narcissist that fools doctors over illnesses or symptoms for outside supply? And I will just quickly say, yes, indeed, I have. In fact, I was a victim of that in a way. Growing up, someone being my narcissistic parent, told my doctor that I was bipolar, and I am not. And I know that now it's been confirmed as an adult that I am not bipolar. I do have ADHD, but I'm not bipolar. So they medicated me for bipolar when I was not bipolar, and that was terrible. And I'm sure there was some supply involved with that, with attention for not me, but the parent. And I've seen narcissists play. One person I know claimed to have cancer and did not. And still to this day is always talking about how they're a survivor of that. So I've seen it in a few different situations. It's really unfortunate. How about you, Dana?
Yep. I've seen the same.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes I think it's unintentional. I have a friend of a friend who is insistent that there's something wrong with her child, and they've gone to multiple doctors, and it's very much along the lines of like Munchausen by proxy type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's very concerning. I fully believe that she fully believes that there's something wrong with her child, and nobody else sees it.
Oh.
So, you know, but then there's other times where, you know, they might just very consciously and intentionally lie for any number of reasons.
Yeah.
I won't say who, but there's somebody on YouTube who had said, you know, that she was in therapy for all of this like horrific stuff that had happened to her as a child. And based on what she's saying, it's physically impossible for some of the stuff that she's described to happen to. It's just not physically possible.
Right.
So it's a lie. So she was going into therapy, lying to her therapist to get support for whatever reason. Maybe she felt superior, thinking she could fool her therapist. Maybe who knows, but you know, yeah, there's just all kinds of reasons people do stuff.
Yeah, for real. Yep.
There was a question, and yes, has deleted it, but it was asked a few times about what comes after narcissists do silent treatment.
Mm. So in my experience, what I've seen, what I see a lot is they will either allow you to apologize for the, to them for whatever you've done wrong. I see my quotes here. Or they will, it could be a number of things. Maybe they've done it in order to go and do something they're not supposed to do in your relationship. Like if you're in a romantic relationship, they gave you the silent treatment and then they went off and cheated, or they went off and did some other thing, or maybe they do it because, you know, you looked at them cross-eyed or whatever. It could be any reason. But a lot of times what I've seen is they will start to kind of open the door to communication in any number of ways. Like they might ask you a question, or, you know, I know you're not, they might claim that you're the one that was not talking to them. I know you're not talking to me, but I need to know this. Or they will do anything. And you very often, if you're in that relationship, you will be so relieved at any gesture that they give you to talk to them again, that you'll just, oh, thank goodness. Okay. Anything you want, what can I do? You know, and I've seen personally, I've seen them come back and be like, you know, literally like, I'm going to allow you to apologize to me for what you did so we can move on. You know, like they're going to accept your apology now, or they're going to, sometimes they'll even apologize, but it's only if that benefits them in some way, in my experience. Sometimes they end up discarding you. It just, I think it's just I don't know that there's one single thing you can expect. I think I would have to hear more about what led up to that in order to give you a better answer. But Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. And I guess, again, I'd kind of flip it around, thinking about what do you need in a relationship? So this, I mean, I've talked about this before and I can't stress this enough in my personal life. And I think for the lives of many survivors out there, it's absolutely game changing when you examine your own standards for the kind of behavior that you tolerate in your life from other people, and realizing that you don't need to, none of us have 100% responsibility for making the relationship work. And so, you know, for me, I don't stay in relationships that are perpetually confusing, crazy making, cause mental anguish, or that I feel fearful, like I'm in danger around this person. So if there isn't effective communication possible, where I bring something up, let's say somebody gives me the silent treatment, and then I say, you know, obviously you're upset, you're not wanting to talk to me. I really don't do the silent treatment. I'd prefer that we talk. I feel the silent treatment is not going to solve anything. So, you know, let's talk about this. You know, are you willing to talk to me about it in the next like day or so? And if they're not, so now that they know, okay, this is not how I handle things, making it clear, like, I'm not going to be in a friendship or a relationship or in a working environment with somebody who handles things this way. Right. It's emotional abuse. Mm-hmm. And then you have to think, okay, well, then what's the next step if they try to do that? Because the silent treatments, it's all about punishing the other person. And it shows a huge kind of lack of maturity on that person's end. So you're going to see, if that's how they handle their issues, you're going to see more immature behavior. So, you know, you got to kind of set the tone and of the relationship of, okay, this is what I need in a relationship. This is kind of what I expect. And if you can't meet me here, you know, that I'm not going to play, kind of a thing. Like, I can't, this isn't working for me.
Yeah.
I got to go. Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. No question. We have some hilarious people in the chat. Okay. But I'm going to skip over all the M talk because we're not trying to talk about that stuff anymore.
Okay.
Okay. But some funny jokes though, you guys, I'm enjoying the jokes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Terry says, a narcissist is just an epic disappointment. I saw one comment earlier. I wish I could remember, but I can't get back to it. Okay. I'm trying to see if I have, BB says, I brought up a controversial topic. Again, I knew it was a controversial topic. I didn't want to focus on the actual thing. I just wanted to focus on the study and tell you that I thought the study was wrong mostly, but that I could point out certain things that were similar anyway, or connected.
Here's a question.
Thank you.
It's from Atala, who says, If you see that a person is hurting from narcissistic abuse, what is the best way to get them to open up about it and go to therapy?
Ooh, good question. I would say, in my experience, it is to share with them. Sometimes it helps to share your own experience with them and to maybe, you know, point them to literature or a video if, you know, if that helps. I think it's a person by person thing, but ultimately, even when you point it out to them, unless they're ready to hear it, they won't hear it, in my experience. And so I would then say, I understand. And, you know, if you ever need to talk, I'm here. You know, with that being said, I can point out the ways that you can help them if you are willing to help them get out or get therapy or whatever, and maybe even suggest ways they can attend therapy without the other person knowing. But ultimately, unless they're ready to hear you and understand what you're saying, I don't really see. I mean, people get stuck in these relationships and then they get defensive because you have then called out their relationship. And I don't know about y'all, but when I'm in the middle of a relationship, when I have been in the middle of a relationship like that, if somebody wants to, it's kind of like, oh no, this is my situation, so you need to stand back, you know, because you get defensive. And then I don't know about, and then in my experience, when I'm with a narcissist and we both have someone to be mad at together, that actually makes us closer. I mean, I haven't been with a narcissist in a long time, but that's been my experience. If you could both. So have you experienced that, Dana, the common enemy thing where suddenly now you. Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, well, this person's trying to drive us apart.
And then you hold on tighter. So be careful. Just be very gentle about it and say, look, I know you're not. If they make it clear to you that they're not ready, then I would say, OK, I hear you. And if you know, I'm here if you ever want to talk, and maybe you can just look over this article I'm going to send you, or, you know, or let me know if you ever, you know, just tell them you're there when and if they're ready to talk about it, if they ever want to talk about it. And you can even, you might even want to say, you know, maybe I misunderstood something, because otherwise that person might end up pushing you away as a result of their own issues, or even the narcissist helping them to push you away. And then they're going to be further isolated. So just be really careful. Dana, thoughts?
It's a tightrope. Walking a tightrope for sure, because, you know, when people are in really dysfunctional relationships, and especially if they're not ready to leave, they do get really defensive. And even if they are ready to leave or they've left, they can get defensive. And there's a lot of confusion too. Sort of like, well, I don't want to kind of paint this person as the abuser. I mean, I wasn't perfect either. So sometimes you can get that, or sometimes a person is fully aware of, no, this person was absolutely abusive and terrifying and scary, and they're comfortable calling it what it is. I try to let people kind of set the tone and pace of that conversation, and let them know that there's no judgment on my end, that I've been through it several times as well. And that I'm here to talk, or if they just want to listen, if they just need somebody to listen. So in kind of just reflecting back to them. So if they're saying, oh, you know, this is, let's say it's the 10th time that he's cheated or, you know, done something, called her names or whatever it might be, him or her, to talk more about, wow, that sounds really hurtful.
Yes.
Or kind of describing that, you know, oh my goodness. Well, you know, what? Just kind of empathizing with them. You know, that was a really cruel thing for them to say. And then kind of just letting them talk. I have found that most people, like, we don't need to have all the answers for people. Sometimes people just need somebody else to kind of hold space for them. And with them verbalizing what's going on, they come up with a lot of their own answers. And I also like the idea of Angie's idea of giving them like a video or an article, because that way it helps to bypass their defensiveness, because it's not about them.
Exactly.
It's a video that existed before them. It's not geared towards them. And then if they're, especially with YouTube, if they're reading comments and everything, they're hearing from other people who can relate, and then it kind of piques their curiosity to where they might start digging. And then, at, you know, 99 times out of 100, they're going to come across something that hits the nail on the head and like, oh, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. And then they're getting that validation, and that kind of picks up a momentum of its own in a good way.
Yeah. And remember that it's very painful to just, you know, to realize that this is happening in your life, especially if you, you know, because we know, those of us who are aware now, we sometimes forget that we didn't know when it was going on. Sometimes we weren't aware right away. For me, it took a long time to figure it out, because they're so good at convincing you that you're the problem, you're the broken one. And so it's almost impossible to see it if you're not ready to see it. And so sometimes people need to kind of stumble into it on their own. Sometimes it does help. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't say something to someone, but I'm saying just be very gentle about it. And maybe another way is just to even say, you know, it's funny that you said that, because I saw this thing on YouTube, or I read this article, or this, something similar happened to me and somebody told me it was this, and I'm sure that's wrong, but here, I'm going to send you this just in case, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of let it be their thing. And then just always, you know, if that's someone you care about deeply, or even someone you just hope is okay, then give them as much support as you can without being too, you know. But again, at the same time, let me say this, and I'm just going to throw it out here for you. Sometimes people will lean on you and complain to you about their relationship and constantly go on and on and on, but then they won't actually do anything to help themselves. And that's kind of, it can become exhausting for you, especially if you are also a survivor, I think. And so don't be afraid to also kind of limit the amount of that you internalize if you do choose to continue to listen. I'm going to say it like that. You feel me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Am I making sense, Dana? Can you help me say that better than what I'm saying?
And you know, and that's part of it. That is just, that's the cognitive dissonance in motion of, this relationship is hurting me, like this person's hurting me, but they're also my biggest, like, they're the, I love this person, but they're treating me terrible. And right. it's back and forth. Or maybe if love isn't even involved, if it's, I am terrified to leave, but I'm terrified to stay.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. So it can be a lot for a person to kind of work through. And there can be a point. I think a lot of people, I mean, I've done it before too, where they confuse venting with taking action. Mm-hmm. And so kind of venting about something allows for that same feeling of, oh, I'm doing something about it. So it releases that pent up energy and frustration and anxiety of, oh, that, you know, oh, you wouldn't believe what so-and-so did, right? Yeah. Instead of channeling that into directly talking to so-and-so or addressing the issue so that it doesn't happen again.
Right.
You know, this maybe a kind of unrelated but still related example is if there's a work situation, you know, and we're constantly coming home and we're like, oh, this one coworker, I cannot believe them. And they did this and they did that. And they did, you know, and it, we're finding ourselves talking repeatedly about it. We human beings in general, we tend to do that, this venting, when we're not in place of being assertive,
yeah,
or in place of setting boundaries. So it can be kind of telling too, for all of us to kind of be aware of our own behavior and realize, oh my gosh, when, in what situations are you venting? Because that means that there needs to be a different boundary put in place. So it can kind of be interesting when you start seeing it in your own behavior. Mm-hmm. But a person who's not ready to leave, it's very difficult to kind of keep hearing about the same thing over and over again. But unfortunately, that tends to be the process, mm-hmm. until they experience enough pain that they're ready to leave, or they're dead.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question from Amber Nicole, okay. Unless you have a question for us.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. Amber says, my narcissist refuses to pay for childcare so that I can work and plan my escape. I have no family here and no friends. What are my other options? And I would just say a couple things. First of all, I don't know if your family is, I don't know if you're in a position where you could, you know, like, exchange daycare with another mom, like if she works evenings, you work days, or if you are in a position to put your child in preschool, maybe. I don't know if preschool will count. I'm assuming your kid's not school-aged yet, based on your question. So sometimes there are free preschools through school districts. So you can check that out. I don't know if you would qualify for any sort of financial aid, but I do know that some families will qualify for that. I'm guessing not based on the fact that you're saying he just refuses to pay for it, in which case I would say work from home. There's lots and lots and lots of work from home jobs you can do online. And as long as you, I would Google legitimate work at home jobs, and I would look at sites of, you know, bloggers and stuff who do. I wouldn't go to a site that is a work at home job. I would start at a site that is not, like a work from home blogger site or something like that, that you can tell is reputable, and check a few different places. And then any job you think about, I would type into your Google search bar. I would type in the name of the job and scam afterward and see what comes up and make sure it's legit before you do it. But there are tons and tons of work from home jobs you could probably even do without him even knowing. So something to think about. Dana, mm-hmm. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. And this is the challenge. There's a few comments in the chat about, you know, some people are in these situations where they're stuck in these relationships due to finances. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, like, that is a huge factor as to why people stay. And it's kind of out of necessity. Like, I can't afford to leave. There's a lot of people out there that live paycheck mm-hmm. to paycheck. I get it. And, and that can be very difficult to leave, especially if you have young children. And it's sort of like, okay, well, I could get a job, but then I'm paying more in childcare than I'm making. So how do I do this? And it can be overwhelming. And so kind of getting that advice of kind of what I was saying about, oh, well, you know, set better boundaries and be assertive. Like, that is just absolute garbage advice in that situation, because it's, but the other person's not going to respect your boundaries, and your boundaries and assertiveness are not going to help the situation. If anything, they're probably going to make it worse if you're stuck there. And, at that point, it's just sort of about staying as safe as you possibly can and biding your time and coming up with an escape plan.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, Maura put this in the chat, and I'll just say, for those of mm-hmm. you who missed it, I have, a whole little page dedicated to this sort of thing, including at least one piece of content that focuses on how to get money when you can't get money. And it's queenbeeing.com/plan. If you want to go check that out, there are a couple of downloads. It's completely free. It requires like an email address, and that's it. You don't have to pay anything at all. So definitely check that out if you're interested. It gives you, as soon as you sign up for it or whatever, it gives you immediate access. You just, like, you confirm your email and then you go get it. So it's definitely not anything I'm trying to make money off of. It's just trying to help people out, because I understand I was poor. Like, I was sadly poor, ridiculously poor when I left my ex. I barely survived, but I did. And here I am today, shining like a star. I'm just kidding. I'm just being silly. But you know my point. My point is I'm doing well.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sometimes I get a little silly, and I realize people don't know me that well. So anyway, that's silly. Okay. Anyway,
somebody mentioned it's Sunshine mentioned try going to a woman's home or shelter, or find a local housing authority. And there was a comment in the chat about the shelter she'd called, and the shelter said that they didn't have room. It's worth knowing that every day is different in a shelter. So they might not have room on Monday, but they might have room on Tuesday. It's oftentimes it's a revolving door mm-hmm. at shelters. So it's worth calling. It's worth calling every day and seeing if there is a room open. And if there isn't, and it's an immediate situation where you're trying to get out immediately, ask them if they know of any other shelters in the area or Google shelters in your area. Normally, you know, a lot of places will, there's a couple of them. Mm-hmm. So, and then call around. And unfortunately it's not, there's so many challenges and barriers with leaving, you know?
So, especially when kids are involved. And I get it. I get it. It was hard for me to do it as well. I'll tell you something. One of our people who is a regular, I don't know if she's in chat today, but she literally did exactly that. She left her home, went and lived in a shelter, and she was, you know, I was impressed with her bravery. And she went and lived in a shelter. She had the shelter help her because she was in a position where I don't think she was allowed to work, or she wasn't allowed to work enough to make any money, you know, to make money that she could keep. Mm-hmm. And so she went and got moved into a shelter, had the shelter help, like used the programs that they had. And they helped her kind of, I guess she trained for skill or she, I don't know. Anyway, somehow they helped her get a job. And then she got the job. She moved and just, I don't know, about 6 months ago, I think she finally moved into her first place of her own. And I mean, I about cried when I saw it because she was so, she worked so hard and she was so brave. And like, I'm not going to like spill her name to you or anything because I think that's disrespectful to do without permission, but she knows who she is and she's watching and she knows how proud of her I've been. It's been a constant, and she was not a client or anything. She was just somebody that's been in part of the Spanily group, you know, our support group on Facebook. And she's been here on YouTube with us. And I mean, it's been an amazing thing to watch her do this. And she's now in a different state. She's totally away from the person. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing. I'm not saying it's right for everyone. I'm just saying it can be done. I know it's harder with kids. And if you don't have people that you can trust outside, you know, of the home that you can like go stay with them for a few weeks, I think it's an option if it's too terrible. The other thing to consider again is, you know, some type of work at home thing. I mean, there's even things like Fiverr.com where you can go and like put your services, anything you know how to do, you'd be surprised how many things you can do. And they do pay pretty quickly. And mm-hmm. you could put the money in a, you know, PayPal or some other sort of online Chime, some other sort of online account that they're not aware of, and just keep it and let it build and keep going until you figure it out. And whatever you do, oh, here's something too. One thing that I did right before, about a year before I decided I was finally leaving, I didn't know for sure I was leaving until I knew, but for about a year before that, I started working on my credit and working on fixing it and making sure that things were in order and things were together because I knew it was coming. and one thing you need to get an apartment usually is credit. So mm-hmm. something else to think about. You can do that really easily, but you're going to probably need another mailing address to get the, if the narcissist checks the mail ever. So something to think about. All right. Anyway, let's see. Do you have a question for us, Dana?
No, I'm still scrolling here.
I have this from Candy. She says, I know it's not advisable, but has anyone had to live in a vehicle to get away from the narcissist? And I would say this, Candy, if there's any way that you can avoid that, and I think that there might be, but I think that if you had to, then you have to do what you have to do. But I don't want you to live in a vehicle if you can avoid it. I would rather see you go stay at a cheap hotel or a women's shelter or something like that, especially if you have kids. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Dana? Anything?
I would agree. Yeah. Contacting a shelter. Sometimes, oftentimes there's churches that can help. And even if you're not a member, letting them know about your situation, seeing if there's a room there, especially now with pandemic where, you know, they're maybe not holding services inside. If they have a room somewhere in the church where you guys could stay, if you could somehow, you know, clean the church or do some sort of services there for them, you know, in exchange for housing or, you know, these kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Yes. And Linda, honey, I'm going to delete your comment only because I think it's dangerous to put it here. So I'm just going to delete that comment. But I appreciate what you said. And if there's something that you would like to do in a safer way, you may contact me and we can work something out to try to do that together. But I don't want you to put that in the chat. All right. sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, goodness gracious. Let's see. We're talking about here. See a lot of talk about demons and whatnot. I think we need to be a little careful with some of this. I'm going to just Do you have any
Okay.
questions
Yeah.
for us?
Here's a question from Soft Breezy Day, who says,
Okay.
"Don't most shelters have a waiting list you can get on?" And my guess would be it depends on the shelter. The ones that I have experience with don't do waiting lists. It's literally first come, first serve. So, because things change so moment to moment, that like somebody could say that they're on a list, but the next thing you know, they've moved out of town or their phone shut off or whatever. Like you would just be chasing people all day long trying to get people in. So most of them are like, okay, call us and see if we have room. And because that's also things change. Like what literally, like one day you could be full, there could be a whole incident that night, and then three people are gone the next day. So yeah.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts about gang stalking, Dana? Do you have any thoughts
I
about
saw
that?
that. I guess I'm a little confused as to that. Or oh, I guess we're talking about in terms of flying monkeys.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
And I've seen that quite a lot, and I have one client who deals with some form of gang stalking pretty regularly. But I think when we're talking about flying monkeys, it's the same thing I would say every time is unless they're physically, I mean, when you're saying gang stalking, to me, that sounds way bigger than just people trying to help the narcissist out by getting information to you or from you. But I think if it's a dangerous situation, you call the police. If you're being harassed, you call, you deal with it that way. But outside of that, I would ignore and reject those people. Or if it's somebody that's doing it because they care about you and they really believe what the narcissist is saying, then my standard answer is to say to them, listen, here's the situation. And if you know me, you know that I'm telling you the truth. Or if you know me, you know I didn't do what they said I did or whatever it is. And if they do know you and then they will be on your side. And if they don't, maybe you take two steps back from them until you figure it out, emotionally speaking. Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. Child of Christ mentions gang stalking are narcissists. And I guess I just kind of wanted to add that, a lot of times with abusive people, it's a very pathological mentality that you're dealing with. And more often than not, they feel like the victim. They minimize their own actions, and so when there are consequences to them, they don't see it as appropriate. Oh yeah, okay, well, yeah, I shoved her, but she was just being dramatic and fell down the stairs, or he didn't do whatever I asked, and I got upset, and but that's why I just unleashed on him. So in their mind, it's, well, look at what you made me do. So when they go
Yes.
about
Oh,
telling the
gosh.
story to other people, realize that they're minimizing their behavior and they're spinning it around.
That's right.
So so the story is, okay, so let's say they get in a fight and this person pushes somebody else down the stairs. Okay. And that person goes to the hospital. That the abusive person, their side of the story is going to be generally, yeah, things just really got out of hand, and she's being dramatic. Yeah, there was kind of this back and forth, and I hardly even touched her. She fell down the stairs, and now she's in the hospital, with a broken leg or whatever. But she was being dramatic. She's doing this to hurt me. She's trying to get a restraining order against me, and she's trying to do this to punish me so I don't get custody.
Right.
And other people that have even people that have experienced an abusive person can understand the craziness of these situations and can be like, oh my gosh, I could totally see my ex doing that to me, like, oh, throwing themselves down the stairs or doing something over the top to try to frame me or, so other people, the point of what I'm saying is other people aren't getting the accurate story and, or even close to it. And so they're manipulated. And
That's
so kind
valid.
of seeing it that way, like realizing that it's not just a bunch of evil, hateful people,
Right.
more often than I mean, sometimes it can be. Sometimes it absolutely can be, you know. But I think more often than not, it's well-intended people who hear one very skewed side of the story that the abusive person's presenting themselves as a victim. And most people want to protect victims.
Yes,
And that's
absolutely.
what you're seeing. That's the result of it. But normal, decent people, it takes quite a while to realize that that's what's going on. Of like, oh my gosh, you know, this person's completely spinning reality to something that didn't happen and painting themselves as a victim. I mean, it just re I mean, adds injury to insult, you know, kind of a thing. It's just absolutely maddening and infuriating.
And I want to point out something for Flower Child said for Candy. She said, "You have to remember that everything is going to feel uncomfortable when you leave, no matter what. My mistake is I didn't do anything. I was frozen in fear. Things will get better." And I can relate to that. It is never comfortable immediately, but you get there, and it gets better each day, just a tiny bit, and you kind of go up and down, and then there's the pink cloud thing. And then when you first leave, sometimes you're like, "Woo! I'm so relaxed. It's so much better. I'm not getting yelled at every 5 seconds." But then it gets hard, and then you kind of crash. So just know that it's not super easy at first. It's gonna be hard, but if you look back, 20 years later, and you've left. And you're happier, and you're moving forward, and you're having a life where you're not being treated like a doormat, I'll put it that way. That's a very mild way to put it. But you'll feel better. You'll feel happier. You will feel more in control, and you will not regret it. So that, I am saying, I mean, maybe not sleeping in your car if you can avoid it, but if you have to do that, like on your way to somewhere else, I mean, I don't know what to say about that, but I agree with someone said, maybe it's nicer to sleep in a car than with a narcissist, and maybe that's true. But I personally, I mean, I would never advise anyone to do that because it's dangerous in its own way, So I would just say, look around. There are like extended stay hotels you can stay in for next to nothing, sometimes like for a whole week. I mean, they're not going to be the best places, but you can get these little door locks to keep yourself safe inside the room so nobody else can come in. They've got these I can't think of the name of it right now, but I bought some to take around with me. They're these little things you stick in the door, and somehow it makes it so that the door can't be opened from the outside without tearing the door off, basically. They're very effective. And they're cheap, like $6 for two of them. You know what I mean? I can't remember the name of them right now, but there's something on. I'll try to find it and stick it in the chat or the description later if I remember. But just be safe. Just keep yourself physically safe and have a plan if you can. If you have a friend who lives in, somewhere else that would let you stay there for a couple of weeks on the couch or whatever to get yourself back on, on your feet. There are lots of things you can do. I definitely do agree that sometimes you just have to do whatever you have to do to get out, and especially if you're, concerned about your physical safety, but even if you're concerned about losing your mind, because I think I have seen something about that or being so scared and stuck that is that sometimes you have to get angry. I had to get angry. I had to get really angry to be able to have the gumption to get up and get out. It wasn't something I wanted to do. I felt very uncomfortable about it, but I felt like if I didn't do it, then I couldn't imagine this being the rest of my life. You know what I mean? So I feel you. I feel your pain. I know it's hard. I know it's not easy. That's what I'll have to say about that. Dana, anything else? I think we're about ready to wrap up if you
No, I think that's really great advice.
Right on. Thank you. This has been an interesting session today. Thank you to those of you who were here, and I apologize in advance if or in I apologize if anyone felt offended by the study that we told about, but please let me repeat to you again. This was not our study, not mine, not Dana's. It was a study of a Canadian group outside of ourselves, University of Toronto. We were just commenting on it. And we don't care if you wear a mask or not. That's all up to you. All right. Have a wonderful week, everybody. We will see you next week over on Dana's channel, Thrive After Abuse. And as always, you can find Dana at thriveafterabuse.com and around the internet at Thrive After Abuse. You will also be seeing her. I think it's like going to be right there. Her, or it might be right there. I don't know. Whatever. You're going to see her thing on there. or subscribe button on this screen when this comes back around. All right, Dana, thank you so much.
Okay, sounds good. I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right.